I am happy that you are listening to Enabled this week. If you have even a speck of vision left, you should consider a vision rehabilitation program. With the guidance of skilled professionals, you'll be trained to make use of whatever vision you have. This program and next week's program will bring you information about vision rehabilitation from the point of view of a fictional man who is actually going through it. A first-person account. You will meet Jim very soon and travel the low vision rehabilitation journey with him. The information for this program came from mdsupport.org, www.mdsupport.org. Learning to Live with Low Vision, a Journey Through Rehabilitation. This is a public service of the MD Support Group. They start by introducing, this is a dramatization of the experiences of Jim, a fictional participant in a low vision rehabilitation program. The intent is to introduce the reader, in your case the listener, to as many of the varied types of tests and interventions as possible. For simplicity, a single character has been used to show the many possible approaches. It does not, therefore, necessarily represent a typical case. Since individual programs will be geared to each person's unique capabilities and goals, evaluation and training may be expected to include some, but not all, of the options presented here. Jim is speaking to you now, and he says, I noticed after my last class on a Friday. He's a teacher, as you can guess. He says, while writing Monday's assignment on the board, I got some chalk in my right eye. I closed it for a second and couldn't see the letters. I actually thought I had accidentally erased them. That's what it looked like. Like I'd smudged them out with my hand or something. Then I opened my other eye, and the letters were there again. I thought maybe there was a smear on my glasses, so I took them off. But the smudge was still there, right in the middle of my left eye. And when I looked at the frame around the board, it was all out of shape, distorted. I don't know why I hadn't noticed it before. I couldn't blink the spot away or rub it away or anything. It was just there, and I didn't know what was going on. I was supposed to attend a staff meeting that afternoon, but I didn't. I just left. I had to find out what was going on, so I went straight home and called my optometrist. He made time for me that afternoon. To make a long story short, I knew in a few hours that I had an eye disease I had never heard of and couldn't even pronounce. I had become one of the vision impaired, and I was off on a trip I had never in my life expected to take. This essay will take you with me as I retrace that journey. It will show you how a program of low vision rehabilitation training can help you live successfully with sight loss. My hope is that by having this information early on, you will not have to experience the emotional distress and the sense of helplessness that I did when I first faced a future with vision impairment. The first question that's asked, what is vision impairment? An estimated 14 million Americans are vision impaired, but only about 120,000 are classified as totally blind. This means that a very large percentage of those millions can benefit from low vision rehabilitation. With the population growing older and living longer, the total number of vision impaired people is dramatically increasing. Some 2.5 million patients, for example, are newly diagnosed each year with macular degeneration, a yet incurable disease of the retina that's the leading cause of vision loss in senior citizens. This is serious, not only on a personal level, but for society as a whole. Each year, the vision-impaired community costs the United States more than $22 billion in educational expenses, income loss, services, and government disability programs. An obvious solution to the problem would be a cure for retinal disease, coupled with ways to restore lost sight. These developments will be a reality in the future, but until then, the most effective approach has proven to be education and training for the vision impaired through good rehabilitation programs. Now, you might know vision impairment is a term which describes varying degrees of vision loss caused by disease, trauma, or even a congenital disorder. Vision impairment may appear as one or more of six general conditions. Vision impairment can occur as blurriness. This is where the visual acuity with the best spectacle correction is still reduced or blurred. It can also appear as a narrowing of peripheral vision or your side vision. Low vision, vision impairment might appear as defects within the field of vision, such as distortion, like if the sides of a box bow outward. Or it can even be blind spots, where you're looking at a page of print and you don't see a portion of it, like a circle, a fuzzy circle. Blind spots. Or it might also appear as a loss of contrast. Things just sort of blend together. It might appear as a sensitivity to glare or to light. Or it might even be a loss of color perception. Some people call that color blindness. The term vision impaired should not be confused with the term legally blind. Legal blindness is defined as an acuity of 20/20 or worse in the better eye with correction. Or it could also be, if you're legally blind, you could also have a visual field of 20 degrees or less in your better eye. So a person who meets one of these criteria might still have usable vision, but he would not be able to read without training on an assistive device. Also, a legally blind person would not be able to meet the requirements for obtaining a driver's license. This person would be described as visually impaired, but another person who is vision impaired might not be necessarily legally blind. Strategies for individuals with total blindness must be non-visual. Many times, vision impaired individuals will also benefit from non-visual solutions for improved accuracy and efficiency with a variety of tasks. The worse the vision, the greater will be the reliance on non-visual techniques and devices. So, with diseases that affect the peripheral or the side field or mobility is more seriously affected. Glaucoma, retinitis pigmentosa, and stroke, for example, can constrict the visual field to as little as 10 to 15 degrees. Even with this severe limitation, however, rehabilitation can successfully reinforce the individual with training in the use of low vision devices. So now we come to an important question that says, what is low vision rehabilitation? Low vision rehabilitation is like physical therapy for someone who's lost a limb. Its purpose, low vision rehabilitation, is to develop strategies to maximize or substitute for diminished sight in order to maintain independence and a sense of self-worth. This rebuilding and reinforcement of the visual foundation is accomplished through identification of goals, introduction to assistive devices, and training. Rehabilitation is not just an introduction to low vision devices. Actually, that might not occur until some time into the program, after the patient has gone through evaluation and training. Only then can appropriate recommendations for the low vision devices be made. Depending on the patient's needs, a good program might also provide education, support groups, and individual counseling. It would help the patient to realize that using such devices and techniques is a sign of tenacity and courage, not a sign of weakness or defeat. People with a constricted visual field might expect to be introduced to scanning therapy and devices such as visual field awareness prisms and reverse telescopes. People with severe vision loss should expect to receive orientation and mobility training, occupational therapy, and information about animal guides, that would be guide dogs usually. In addition to these skills, vision rehabilitation specialists teach how to manage daily activities such as the following nine things. The first one, they'll teach you how to adapting the home for safety and navigation. They will teach you about activities for improving lighting conditions, for preparing meals, for labeling your medications, clothing, and appliances. They'll teach you how to manage writing, how to do keeping of your own financial records. They'll teach you about personal grooming, using magnifiers for easier reading, and also about systemizing shopping and payment at the register. The next question is, why do I need low vision rehabilitation? You're going to meet Jim pretty soon. Why do I need low vision rehabilitation? There are some good reasons for low vision rehabilitation training, the most important being increased physical and psychological health. Research has shown that people with low vision tend to have more emotional difficulties and have a higher risk of accidents than normally sighted individuals. Patients who have undergone rehabilitation, however, have reported significant improvements in their functional abilities, a high rate of continued use of low vision devices, improvement in reading and distance vision, and general satisfaction with the quality of life. And now Jim says, "When my right eye went bad, I couldn't read, and I couldn't drive. I couldn't work in my wood shop, which bothered me a lot. I thought I was going totally blind. I became very depressed and pretty much decided that life as I had known it was pretty much over. There was more stress at home. My family couldn't accept the fact that I couldn't see very well. And I just couldn't help out, couldn't do the carpentry, and couldn't help my kids with building their houses. My wife, whose name is Marie, was very understanding, but it was difficult for her. I tried to continue teaching. The students and the staff were very supportive in the beginning, but they seemed to forget after a while. Writing lesson plans and grading papers was difficult. I particularly had problems with reading textbooks and journals." So we come to step one, Jim's evaluation. The first step in the rehabilitation process is working one-on-one with a counselor or a specialist who will assess your needs and identify which programs are best suited to meet those needs. My eye doctor referred me to the optometrist at the Low Vision Clinic for my evaluation. After my appointment was scheduled, a low vision therapist called me and asked questions about my health, my eye condition, and what she called my visual goals, the things I wanted to do but I couldn't because of my impairment. Then when Marie and I went to the clinic, the therapist talked with us about the problems I had that were caused by my poor vision. She explained how I could make the best use of my remaining sight through training, low vision devices, and services. She said that together she, the low vision team, and I would lay out a rehabilitation plan to help meet my goals, and that my doctors would get reports as we went along. She told me that the program could take several visits over a few weeks, and that I would have to really want to succeed for it to work. Well, I did want it to succeed, not just for myself, but for Marie and my kids. So I said, go for it. My initial visit was not what I expected. Rather than the kind of eye exam I had received from my medical eye doctor, this therapist put me through a battery of questions and tests to determine my functional needs, my visual capabilities and limitations, and any history of health problems and related treatment requirements that might affect my visual recovery. Together, we developed a complete case history to determine how I was functioning and what my needs might be. This included an analysis of my reading habits and other near vision activities, the use of low vision devices, and incidents of eye strain or fatigue. I had to answer many questions about such things as my ability to care for myself, the nature of my home environment, problems caused by my vision impairment, my employment situation, my relationships with family and friends, ways in which I have adapted to vision loss, and how well I am doing mentally and emotionally. I thought the questions would never end, but I knew how important they were. The rehab therapist didn't leave any stones unturned, that's for sure. I think by the time she was through, she probably knew more about me than my own wife did, and after 36 years of marriage, that is saying a lot. After analyzing the results of my initial evaluation, the vision team agreed that I was a good candidate for success through rehabilitation, and they began to devise a plan to fit my needs and goals. Now we come to step two, and that would be the vision assessment. The next step was for the low vision optometrist to assess my visual functions through tests and techniques which were adapted to fit my visual impairment. My visual acuity and refractive status were tested using special low vision refractive techniques. These tests made use of larger-than-usual testing charts, control of the illumination, the use of trial frame refraction, and techniques that allow for eccentric or off-center viewing. The tester also used four other tests. The first one you probably know about is called the Amsler grid, which is a simple way to identify any defects that might appear in my central field. They also might use a contrast sensitivity test. This would determine my ability to discriminate subtle changes in vision that occur in the real world rather than the absolute black-on-white contrast of visual acuity charts. They might also use a BAT. This is an acronym for a brightness acuity tester. They would do this to look at the impact of glare on my retina, a brightness acuity tester, or a BAT. And the next one is a color vision test for possible functional implications. This is to see if you're colorblind. After these tests were finished, my ocular motility was also evaluated. This was to determine if I had any problems with impaired eye movement. My visual field was analyzed in order to predict how I might function in day-to-day activities, and also how well I might respond to various rehabilitative approaches. Four types of visual field tests are available for this purpose. The first one is a tangent screen test during which the patient identifies a spot of light moving into his peripheral field. Another possible visual field test would be what they call a confrontations test, wherein the doctor introduces objects such as his fingers or lights from the side to see if there are any large field defects, like loss of side vision on one side due to a stroke. This test is not sensitive to small changes or slight changes in the vision. There's another one called the perimeters test. In this case, lights or other targets are presented to the patient in various positions. In a manual perimeters test, the doctor controls the target movement and the speed of the target and maps out the field loss areas. A computerized perimeters test features a computer program that presents a specific light pattern and then prints out the results with an analysis. And finally, to ensure that there were no other ocular diseases or complications, I was given an external eye health evaluation. My eyes were tested for intraocular pressure and also were dilated for an internal examination. My test results confirmed that I had the exudative or the wet form of macular degeneration with no other ocular complications. My condition had first been diagnosed as age-related macular degeneration at the age of 60. At that time, I had large and numerous deposits. They're called drusen. These deposits were beneath the retina of both eyes, and my vision was distorted by the accumulation of this debris. They're called drusen, D-R-U-S-E-N. 2 years later, at the age of 62, hemorrhaging developed in my left eye. It was treated with laser coagulation therapy, which stopped the bleeding, but left permanent dark spots in my visual field. My acuity in that eye was measured at 20 over 200. A few months after that, hemorrhaging occurred in my right eye beneath the fovea, or the very center of the macula. Because of the location of the leaking vessel, it could not be lasered, so scarring from the bleeding left that eye centrally blind. Unfortunately, current treatments, which might have saved my sight, were not available at that time. We now come to the third step in this process that Jim is going through. This is this beginning his rehabilitation training, step three. He says, I agree to attend weekly training at the center. My rehabilitation therapist and I established a list of personal visual goals that would give direction to my training. These goals were in the areas of activities of daily living. These are often called independent living skills, computer use, and counseling. Vocational rehabilitation might have been part of the program, but I was sort of fortunate. Before my rehabilitation training began, I was able to retire early with full benefits. If I had needed to remain employed, several psychometric assessments would have been made to evaluate my current skills as they related to my teaching assignment or other areas of vocational interest. My training began with safe cooking strategies, labeling techniques, use of adaptive equipment, and an evaluation of the safety and lighting in my home. Most of the training for the cooking took place in a supervised program of self-care, using a specially designed apartment at the center. The first picture shows him standing in a sort of a mini apartment-sized kitchen with his trainer right next to him. He continues by saying, with the help of my wife Marie, who handled most of the domestic responsibilities at home, my level of visual functioning was determined to be safe and sufficiently functional to support my daily living activities. I was trained and evaluated, especially in every important facet of daily living. If my disease was the type that might lead to severe or total vision loss, I would have practiced while wearing a sleep shade. Fortunately, macular degeneration leaves you with a peripheral field intact, so this part was not necessary. I relearned everything. Things I had been doing my whole life, I had to learn to do all over again, this time without depending so much on my eyesight. It wasn't easy. I trained twice a week for 6 weeks, and each session lasted for 1 to 2 hours. The first thing the therapist showed me was a system for recording phone numbers, and she enrolled me in the free telephone service for visually impaired people. Then she showed me how to take care of my clothing and to do the laundry in a whole different way. We labeled my clothing and all the appliances in several ways. Sometimes we just used large print, but she also showed me how to use some stuff that left a raised, high contrast line that I could feel. I learned how to sew and iron safely, including how to use a needle threader, and the therapy offers some good practical advice, like I should wear wrinkle-free clothes. I hate to iron, so that was a very good suggestion. We get into personal grooming and hygiene, like brushing my teeth and taking care of my finger and toenails. I never thought how tricky those little things could be without good vision. We worked on budgeting, including using a CCTV and a signature template for reading and paying bills. And now I carry a multi-compartment wallet for keeping my money denominations separate. That was a great idea. I'll have information on these products for you next week in the follow-up program to this one. But continuing this week's program, my therapist had a lot of good housekeeping tips too, like assigning definite locations for cleaning equipment and tools, also using disposable plates and utensils, all kinds of things like that. She taught me some practical eating skills too, so I wouldn't embarrass myself or Marie in a restaurant. I never thought I could use my fingers to eat and still look classy. I learned how to cook without burning the house down or without losing a finger. I learned to take along a large print grocery list and a hand magnifier when I go shopping. And one of the most important things that she made sure I knew about was where our basic medical supplies are located and how to identify and use them. The rehab therapist I also worked with me in communications using large print and also in touch typing. I never could type without looking at the keys, but I'm pretty darn good now. They also got me 2 pair of sun shields, one pair to cut down on the glare from artificial lighting and another for bright sunlight outside. I knew how to use a computer already, but I didn't know about all of the magnification and speech software there is for the visually impaired. During my residential training, the adaptive technology manager showed Marie and me the latest technology and let us try several different programs. I also know about several agencies and organizations where I can get adaptive software at no cost. Since I'm on retirement income now, that's good advice. My condition was not severe enough to require any orientation and mobility training. A person with nearly total vision loss would require about 25 hours of individual sessions by what's called an O&M specialist. This refers to an orientation and mobility specialist. You would also have to go for advanced training in actual public situations. The activity would also include several hours of calisthenics and walking, Skills such as safe street crossings, negotiating stairs and curbs, and utilizing public transportation would also be learned, in addition to familiarization with new environments. Use of an animal guide would also be an important consideration, as would training in Braille. And once again, this would be for people who had nearly total vision loss, 25 hours or more, just to begin with, for this kind of training, if you're totally blind. The article continues, both personal adjustment counseling and marital counseling were undertaken to help my family and me deal with my loss of vision. Counseling was a daily part of the team approach to my visual rehabilitation. In general, I handled my vision loss pretty well, I think. The most difficult part was dealing with the changed dynamics within my family and with problems of communication with my children. Gradually, my self-esteem and confidence in my ability to overcome my visual impairment greatly improved. During my training, weekly team meetings were held with Marie in attendance. My progress was discussed and program plans were reviewed. Direct lines of communication were constantly maintained between the Rehabilitation Center's staff, the state sponsoring agency, my family, and me. Low vision management was another important part of my rehabilitation. This centered around two areas: modification of my environment and possible treatment options with low vision devices. You'll hear lots more about these two areas in next week's program. And next week you'll also hear about two of my favorite things in the whole world, puffy paint and bump dots. So be sure you have a pencil and paper handy next week. This week you've been learning to live with low vision, a journey through rehabilitation. This is a public service project of a group called mdsupport.org. So in summary, our new friend, the functional Jim, led us to a definition of low vision and an explanation of low vision rehabilitation. He then took us through his evaluation, his assessment, and the beginning of his training to make use of the vision that he does have. Next week, there will be more, lots more. To end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about. Life is not always a matter of holding good cards, but sometimes playing a poor hand well. This was said by Jack London. John Griffith London was an American novelist, journalist, and social activist, a pioneer in the world of commercial magazine fiction. He was one of the first writers to become a worldwide celebrity and actually earned a large fortune from writing. He was born in 1876 in San Francisco, California, and he died in California in 1916. Some of his books you might remember: The Call of the Wild, White Fang, and then there's a short story, To Build a Fire. Boy, it takes you right back to those high school days, doesn't it? Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.